Welcome to Oz Table Talk. We help millennials wrestle with their faith and start the conversations that we have been avoiding too long. So, let's get started. Hey, Oz Table Talk family, great to see you all today. You're all looking great. So, today we have a very special podcast in store for you. It is an interview with Pastor Matt Lucio. Pastor Matt is from the US and he is most notable for his work on the Adventist History podcast. Now, I've always loved Adventist history and his podcast just made me love it all the more. But better than that, it makes Adventist history accessible and entertaining for people who aren't necessarily history buffs. So as we go through this particular interview, Dave and Matt sit down and speak to Pastor Matt, and they talk about all kinds of things, ranging from spiritual entrepreneurship to translating Adventism into something that our culture can understand, and I am sure you're going to love this interview. So without further ado, I'm going to hand you over to the guys.
G'day and welcome to another episode of Oz Table Talk. Today we're doing a real special episode because we're interviewing Matt Lucio, pastor in America. And so it's going to be really cool. So thanks for joining us at the virtual table today, Matt.
The virtual table is very nice, and I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks, man. We really appreciate that.
It's just, what kind of wood is in this virtual table? I mean, it's very beautiful. I love the grain.
Man, it's whatever you want it to be.
I was going to say, it's got to be an Australian hardwood.
Oh, yeah. Get us that blue gum.
Yeah. So, so today we're going to pretend to be with you. So, whereabouts are you, Matt?
Right now, I'm in a secure and undisclosed location, a bunker underneath the Washington Monument.
Yeah.
Or I'm in Peoria, Illinois, where I pastor.
Okay, we'll go with the bunker.
Yeah, bunker sounds
definitely.
Cool.
So, do you have an office in your home, or are you at church?
I have an office in the church. And so, yeah, that's where I'm in now. And this office is actually becoming my second home because my wife kicked one of my couches out of the house. Oh. So I needed a place to put it. And it's a very nice couch. I mean, you would like this couch if you met it.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm sure.
So I brought it into the office.
It goes really well with the table, by the way.
Yes, it does. It does. They pair very, very well together. So, you know, my only criteria is I just need a couch in the office that I can sleep in. And I have a fridge in here and plenty of books. So what else do you need?
Sweet. Yeah.
I'm at loss, mate. What else do you need?
Really?
Virtually a man cave. So just for our listening audience, the way that we got to know Matt was the three of us attended the Digital Discipleship Conference, which we've talked about in a previous episode, and we mentioned Matt there, and that was really awesome. Before we went to DDC, though, I actually got to know Matt a little bit through his podcast. I wasn't actually a podcast listener. You know, we were doing our thing, but I never was a podcast listener. And then I saw somebody recommended your podcast on Twitter, and it actually intrigued me because I was like, they said this guy makes history interesting, and I was like, well, that'll be new. And so I went and listened, and boy, I was like hooked by like the first episode, man. So yeah, congrats.
And thank you. I really benefit from everybody's low expectations of what the podcast could be.
Yeah. But no, like, seriously, I actually have become a serial podcast listener since then. So, I don't know. Maybe it was you. Maybe it was just the love of history. I don't know.
Just didn't
Yeah,
know.
I think you wonder how many things in life we don't really like because we've never found somebody to do it in a way that we find compelling.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, maybe I would really love math if somebody just explained math to me better than it's been explained to me. I don't know.
Maybe that could be your next podcast.
Maybe. Math podcast. That would be a first.
Yeah, because I can remember you saying that if you sit around waiting for experts, nothing's ever going to happen. So.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Go beat the expert.
So, yeah, then obviously we met Matt at DDC. So, you met him first.
Yeah, Rosie. Well, I went to, obviously, that first workshop you did, Podcasting 101. And I can remember one of the first questions you asked me where you were asking me about sound equipment and did I know what we were using? And I think I looked up at you with a blank look going, we wrap some wire around our head and have a little microphone hanging off it. Yeah. I have now learnt that this is all road equipment.
We actually should have been on video so you could see our setup.
Yeah. It's all pretty.
You know, I've seen pictures of it. Are the pictures that you guys put online, are they Photoshopped to make yourselves, like, your setup look better?
This is authentic, bro. There is a legit table surrounded by five guys with a bit of wire wrapped around our heads.
Yeah. Let me just tell your guys' listeners that, of course, you actually do sit around an actual table, and before you guys become even more famous, maybe some people should be like submitting some bids for the table signed by all of you. Put some like polyurethane over your signature so it's really just permanently on the table.
Wow.
So, guys, get your bid in now. Let's start it at, you know.
Hey, well, we've got a contact.
$1,000.
We've got a contact down at the Ellen White Research Center, and they've got the vault there. You know, maybe it could get stored there one day.
That's right. That's right. It's like this desk was Ellen White's. This table belonged to people who talked about Ellen White.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, the next generation.
That's right.
All right, so for those of our audience who don't know you, Matt, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Toledo, Ohio, which is Ohio is kind of like a heart-shaped state, and so Toledo would be kind of in the top left corner, so to speak.
Yeah.
So Michigan and Ohio a long time ago fought a war over Toledo to take over the city, I guess, and Michigan lost, which is a very big part of who I am. They celebrate. But I mean, since then, I moved on. I've probably spent about 40% of my life in the state of Tennessee, where I went to college and started pastoring. Mm-hmm. And since then, we've moved to Iowa and Illinois. We're hitting all the states with vowels.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So where's next?
Where's Idaho? I guess.
I don't know. Cool. Yeah.
Utah.
Yeah.
Awesome. So we're a bit curious too about your name. Where does Lucio come from?
That's a really dangerous question. So the nice answer, I mean, it has Latin roots, and it comes from the same root as the word light, Lux.
Okay.
So the not so nice answer is that I share that root with Lucifer.
I was kind of waiting for it when you were saying that, you know, comes from the word light. I thought, oh, wait a second, isn't that where Lucifer comes from? Yeah.
Yep. Pretty much. So we share the same root.
So was your father from overseas or American born?
My father was American born. You know, having these conversations is like everybody has a crazy story of immigration in their past.
Yep.
I mean, except you guys. You guys are just descendants of criminals.
Yeah,
that's right.
So on my father's side, my great-grandfathers on my paternal his maternal and paternal side, one came from Mexico and one came from Italy.
Oh, okay.
The same generation, they both immigrated together, and their kids, that is, my grandparents were the first generation, I guess, Americans here. And so we have that kind of Mexican and Italian mingling. So we have great food in our family.
Yeah, wow, man.
That sounds nice.
That does sound nice.
I can sympathize with you too about the Mexican part, because down in Australia, you know how you guys have the North and the South thing? These guys are all Queenslanders. And I'm from New South Wales originally, and so they call me a Mexican.
Yeah.
Do they really? Yeah.
South of the border, mate. South of the border.
Do they threaten to build a wall?
At the time of State of Origin, which is the football contest between the New South Wales and Queenslanders, yes.
Yeah. We run a best of three rugby league competition, and even if you're not a rugby league fan, like, pretty much the entire eastern side of the nation just stops to watch rugby league.
Yep.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, who usually wins?
Don't ask that question.
For the last 12 years, Queensland has won 10 of the 12 contests.
Good grief.
Yeah, but see...
But, we won this year.
New South Wales did win this year because we've come to the end of an era. Pretty much what... what happened is Queensland had started this dominance era where we just had like heroes in football just stand up, and it was this unstoppable team, allowed them to win in the world competitions and things like that. But now they're all like 34 and they're retiring because, you know, playing a contact sport.
Wouldn't that be nice?
You know yeah, that once you get at that kind of age, you can't continue to play on. So as a Queenslander, as a Australian, it's actually a very sad time for me watching these heroes that I grew up through high school start retiring. And I'm just like, well, what are we left with? And you see all this young blood and it holds promise, but maybe not the promise of dominance that we've become so accustomed to.
I can just see Matt. He's over there in America and he's getting his shoulder ready for you to cry on.
Yeah.
No, I'm just Googling rugby. I understand what that must feel like for you. It's like you're King Louis and you're watching the peasants ransack your palace. You know, it's like they don't deserve this. They didn't build this.
Yeah, that's right. This is exactly right. We built this, and now the New South Wales are going to come in and steal it for a couple of years. It hurts, man. Like they won 1 year, and next thing they're talking a dynasty. It's like, check yourself, mate.
Right. Like, at least wash your hands before you touch the stuff. You know? Yeah.
You don't know who's held that trophy before you.
All right. So before Wilsey goes off on another tangent, tell us about your immediate family, Matt. So you've just recently had an addition, right?
Yeah. So we had our second daughter. So two of two kids. My wife Laura did a fantastic job. I mean, I don't know how to rate how well women do, but she seemed to rock it. And if I could just make a public confession for the first time, I mean, you guys have rugby and stuff, and of course we have American football, and college football is kind of the thing I'm most interested in, and naturally for the Ohio State Buckeyes. And they were playing a really hard team when we went to the hospital in labor, and Laura let me finish watching the game.
Oh, wow. Oh, man. She is committed.
She doesn't really care, you know, because she's from Romania. So American football, anything, you know, all of our sports, just it doesn't seem to affect her. But I was amazed by this. I actually took a picture of watching the TV in the delivery room, and I posted it on Ohio State fan group on Facebook. And I, for the first time in my life, I was a super fan. People were bowing down to me. If I drank and we were at a bar, somebody would be buying me drinks all night because they were just amazed at what I was able to get away with. So I feel, you know, I feel really, really blessed, and the baby's healthy. We named our older daughter, who is four, we named her Aerith, and then this newborn is named Arwen. And so they're both doing great.
And, that's awesome, man. That's really
I'm super
cool.
Thankful. Yeah, it is. Thank you.
And obviously, we want to give you from our Oz Table Talk family a big congratulations and well wishing on your newborn and this new section of life. Because I'm sure it's, you know, being your second doesn't make it any less, you know, harder or more challenging, or I guess, you know, learning to lose the sleep all over again.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I just want to sleep. That's why I have the couch in here.
Yeah.
people think I'm working all day. They can't understand why I'm in here all day and yet my sermons are 5 minutes long.
Just getting in those hard power naps.
Yeah, that's right. But thank you guys. I appreciate it.
So how long have you been pastoring?
I've been pastoring for, this is my ninth year.
Well,
yeah.
Almost tenure, mate. Do you get long service over there?
Yeah, that's right. I think at 10 years, they give me a pony and a fruit basket. And then at 15, I get a diamond. I don't remember how exactly this goes, but it feels like I've been married for a long time now.
Dude,
to the conference.
Yeah.
Man, that's rough. Australia, you get better benefits, man.
don't rub it in, okay? Yeah. Every time I talk to an Australian, it's like the first conversation they want to have with me is what America is doing wrong politically and why Australia is doing it right.
Mate, look, I'm just going to be the first.
I get it. No argument.
I'm going to be the first Australian to say that we can't even decide on who's going to be our prime minister. So we've got no judgment, okay?
I'm kidding. Every time I look down there, it's like, I remember the redhead. Wait, who's in there now? This is like two or three prime ministers later from what was her name? Julia? No.
Julia Gillard, yep.
Yeah.
That was crazy enough. Not probably the worst we've seen since. So that's a very weird statement to make.
We can empathize right now.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Hopefully, we'll see some common sense prevail at some point in life.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say, what was the drive that that made you take up pastoring? You know, we know, along with plenty of other professions, it's often a thankless job where you're expected to know everything, be an expert on everything, be all wise, all loving, all caring for many different, I'm even going to say it, factions within churches. And so I was just going to say, like, man, what makes you go, yeah, I'm going to make that a career?
Well, I obviously did it for the fame and the money. I mean, clearly.
Yeah. Rolls Royce you got's real nice.
Right. Yeah, it's much more complicated. When I first became an Adventist when I was a younger teenager, the church that I was baptized at actually asked me to preach within a few weeks. I can't remember exactly how long it was. And so I thought that was normal.
Okay.
And so I did it, and then I've just always felt since that moment, it's like, this is what God has called me to do.
Okay.
Now, I mean, I'm sure they regretted it, but I still have that first sermon, and that was over 20 years ago now. I still have that first sermon, and that was painful. Now that I look back on it, I'm like, oh, this was a terrible sermon. Why did they encourage me? Why did they just stop me? And I realize, well, if they didn't have mercy on me, I never would have gotten any better. So but yeah, that's it. They just encouraged me to get up, and as I did it from time to time after that, I realized that this is what God was calling me to do. I don't know how to kind of explain it or prove it. It's just,
well, so when the conference is like looking for more pastors, do you just, like, when you get people coming through for baptism, you just get them up to preach? Or
I've never done that to anybody since, and So I don't know. I mean, it wasn't until many years later that I'm like, oh, you mean you don't do that with everybody?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean you hardly do that with anybody? Because, you know, I don't know. I should be careful what I say. Some of the people we baptize are crazy. Like, they need to kind of, like, mellow out, you know? Like, they come out hot. And some of them come out hot and they're ready to go.
Hmm.
And some come out hot and it's like you need a little bit more balance and maturity.
Yep.
Yeah, so it was a dangerous thing they did, but I can't help but think God was behind it.
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
That's pretty cool.
It's cool that you felt that call, though. You know, that's a really important part of pastoral ministry, hey?
Yeah.
And so
while
we've been capturing your humanity, I was just wondering, do you have three, I guess, quirky or unusual habits or facts about yourself that you'd like to share with us and your audience?
It'd be a shorter list if I just told you three normal things about myself. It'd be a little bit easier. Okay. Quirky. Okay. Here's quirky. My absolute favorite sport is paintball.
Oh, my man.
That is. I've been playing that. Like, I love paintball. Like, back in the day, I used to work with my dad, and so he had a construction company, and we used to come home after work, and my friend and I, he worked for my dad too, and we would go in the backyard and we had some woods and we shot each other with BB guns.
Yep.
And I think, I don't know why, it just never occurred to me that was an absolutely dumb thing to do. I didn't have any glasses, like no mask. We just like ran out in the woods running around trying to shoot each other. And then when he shot me one time and it got lodged underneath my skin and I had to go get tweezers and a knife to get it out, the BB, I realized we got to find some other kind of gun.
Yeah.
And so paintball ever since.
Yeah, paintball ever since. So, okay. That's maybe a little bit quirky. I like taking church members out to go play. That's the fun thing to do.
Have you got a scar?
What's that?
A paintball.
You got a scar from paintball?
Well, I was going to ask if you had one too, because I do have one. I've got one on my rib cage. I was shot really? From about probably a meter and a half, 2 meters away, and it just like split and blistered the skin. Because when I play paintball, me and my mates, we go hard. Like we'll wear footy shorts, yeah. So short shorts and singlets, and that's it, man. Because speed is power. You know those bullets are only like firing at 300 feet per second. So we figure if we dress light, we can outrun them.
That's right. Well, some of us carry a wrench out there on the field with us, and you know, maybe 320 or 340 feet per second is a little bit better. And you play to win, all right?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm not confessing anything. I just heard somebody do that once. But yeah, man, I absolutely hear what you're saying. You know, you got to be fast. You can't. It's not just about hiding. Okay. Second quirky thing about me. I'm entirely normal.
So you can't think of anything else quirky to say.
Well, okay, here's, you know, every time I speak, I there's like a voice of reason at the very back of my head that's like, is this the conversation that's going to get me fired?
I see you had that dilemma with Burn the Haystack only just a little while ago.
Yeah, and so I feel like that little voice is going to save me someday. I don't know. I tend to just kind of have like no thought of my job security.
Do you just like being to wave diplomatic to that little voice as you drive straight past it?
it's like a little like Queen's wave, just kind of like a tilting of the hand.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So I mean, other things, quirky things that I do. All right. Well, I guess in this case, I'm not as quirky as some people I know. But I'll wear sandals in the winter, which is maybe a bit of a bigger deal here than down there.
Yeah.
I feel that's a real dad thing. I'm not going to lie.
Well, I mean, it's just so inconvenient sometimes to just put on socks and shoes and you just want to run out and get somewhere.
But do you have thongs over there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Then yeah, that's what I just throw on.
Why sandals over thongs?
Well, I mean, I guess to me, a sandal is just like thongs would be a type of sandal. And so, yeah, but that's what I mean.
Okay. Cool, man. Cool.
All right. Yeah. So I don't, my wife kind of judges me for that. I don't know why. She's just always very rational.
Just tell her that people get married in thongs in Australia, man. They'll like put on a full suit and then get special wedding thongs.
Really?
Yeah, man.
Well, you guys are much more laid back about these things than we are here.
Well, it's just, I don't know. Thongs are culture down here.
Yeah, absolutely. I believe that. Like, I mean, and people wear them here in during the summer and stuff. But at a wedding, I think if I would have tried that, I would be dead by now. it doesn't happen very, very frequently. Like, maybe barefoot on a beach. That might fly here. Yeah. But.
All right. Well, yeah, seeing as you're so normal, we'll let you get away with two quirky things.
All right.
So we did want to ask you a couple of questions though before we let you go. So when we were at DDC, you did a workshop that I attended called Adventist Entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to flesh that out a little bit with you on the podcast if you didn't mind. So I attended it, and one of the things that sort of struck me from your presentations was that when we look back at Adventism as it was a growing movement, it seems like entrepreneurship was really central to both the growth of the movement and the movement itself. So I was wondering, how do you see entrepreneurship in the church today? Do you think it's still there, or do you think it's lacking? What do you see?
It's still there. I think, let's see here, a part of a few kind of factors to qualify that answer, to frame that answer. Mm-hmm. It's still there. Number one, part of our problem today is that we have such a well-developed hierarchy of administration and so forth that we I think sometimes that stifles entrepreneurship, yes. spiritual entrepreneurship, yeah. because like we're waiting for permission, we're waiting for forms, we're waiting, you know, but it's still there. And I think because a lot of the entrepreneurial activity that we do kind of is like an end run around the church structure. Mm-hmm. Like it's a thing we have to do because accommodating the structure and going through those hoops and climbing that ladder, all those metaphors, it's hard. So we do it, and it often gets unrecognized, I think, by official leaders. But of course, you know, we have, I'm sure you guys, you know, DDC is a example of Avenus spiritual entrepreneurship, yeah. right? I mean, I guess they could have like waited for the union to plan it, you know, or a conference to plan it or something. But it's like, hey, you know, I mean, we want to get as much help as we can from the church structure, and then we're going to just do it.
Yeah.
So yeah. The problem is that the church structure, our church life, is seen as sufficient. We all know it's not the best. I think you interview anybody in a church, and it's like, yeah, it could be better, mm-hmm. you know, the way we do things. But it works. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, so as over here, we have the business writer Jim Collins, and he says, good is the enemy of great. And what we have is good. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes that stifles mm-hmm. entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, it's still there. Like, we're still doing crazy things. We often just don't get paid for it or recognized for it.
Yeah, that's true. So I suppose, you know, some of the ways that we express our entrepreneurship often come out in, you know, the independent or self-supporting ministries. Because, like you said, I suppose entrepreneurship is synonymous with creativity, and it's hard to be creative when you don't have freedom.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I think some of the things, I can't speak for you guys, but of course we have like a bazillion Avenus podcasts coming up mm-hmm. and some YouTube channels and some other things. And I think sometimes, I know I do it to keep myself sane. Mm. Because I don't think I can... here we go again, my fireable offense. Because yeah. I don't think I could be fully, I guess, fulfilled as a pastor mm-hmm. not having an outlet like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a fair call.
You know, so... whether it's writing books, as some people do, or YouTube, or this, or they start their pet ministry on something or another, you know, I think that's like a healthy kind of, like, we need that in order to stay sane, because just doing what's expected of pastors week in and week out, I think for many of us, it's not quite fulfilling enough.
Mm. So do you see any ways that we as a church could return to our entrepreneurial roots? And within that question, have you done anything at your local church that... you feel like is a good strategy that people could try and apply?
You know, that's a really good question. I think the fundamental thing I think we have to be careful of, this is kind of my theory, mm-hmm. is I don't think we should teach entrepreneurship because I think it has to be organic.
Yep.
It has to arrive out of a place of conviction, like, yeah, man, I really believe Jesus is coming soon. I really believe these things are true. And that should be the fuel for it. It shouldn't be like, well, I read this business book, and it tells me I should be, you know, I should be doing more, or I should take risks, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that really the way to increase Avenus entrepreneurship is what could help is creating a culture that says, you know, you don't have to look to the board to go give a Bible study to somebody, mm-hmm. or if you want to start some pet ministry, go do it. You know, mm-hmm. we got to kind of incentivize people to be free,
yep.
and not to rely on the structure.
Okay.
And at the same time, I mean, I just think you just get people excited about Jesus, mm-hmm. and they'll go do it on their own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, amen.
Yeah, that's real powerful. And while we're kind of sitting there, you know, on things that you said at this conference, this, you know, DDC, you shared a message, and you called it Translating Adventism. Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
Yeah, okay. So I want you to give, obviously, our listeners a brief summary of what you shared in that message and why you think we need to translate Adventism. And while you're doing that, you know, what's probably the, you know, the major things, you know, the top one, two, three things that we need to translate?
Okay. Okay, so... Translating Adventism in brief just kind of refers to the work of how we take Adventism's resources and values and principles and find ways of explaining them to different cultures, to new generations. And so, part of the reason why I chose that as a topic is because I think it kind of guards against the hubris that our generations can experience, because, I mean, we have all these new technologies and we're doing these new things, and sometimes I don't mean necessarily like us sitting around the virtual table, but in general, like, we can feel like every other generation that came before is doing it terribly, and we're going to do it right now. We've got all this new technology, and we're going to rock it. And it's like, so the idea of translating Adventism is to situate our work today within, like, to take the long view of it. Mm-hmm. That what we're doing is simply what every generation has to do. Mm. And just to kind of frame what we're doing. So maybe it kind of humbles us a little bit, because it's like, okay, I'm not really doing some brilliant thing that's better than anybody else has ever done, but I am doing a necessary thing. So it kind of humbles us, but it also kind of, I hope, gives us permission to do the thing that we're doing, because it's not like, oh, I like videos, and so I'm going to edit videos and put them on YouTube. You know, it's like it's a hobby. No, that's necessary. Like, we need to be doing that. So I, again, like, the two kind of objectives there were just to keep us humble by framing what we're doing in the long view, but also to encourage us, because the little hobby, the little interest you have in this technology or this medium is essential to who we are as a church if we're going to grow.
I think it's really important what you were saying there as well, because what we have to recognize is we wouldn't be Adventists if we're honest, if the message wasn't fantastic, you know. And so if we actually believe in the message that we possess as a church, then we should be stoked about the truth that we have, and we should be looking for creative ways to express that truth in a way that's going to be relevant and exciting to the culture around us, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, I just want to empower my peers and my betters. Like, just, yeah, man, I mean, just take ownership of this thing that's going on. Mm. This is not your father's church. This is not your grandmother's church. This is your church.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know,
preach it, brother.
Well, preaching the preachers.
So, would you have any major suggestions for anyone listening that goes to an Adventist church that you think, well, these are some of the key elements that I think need to be, you know, translated in that way?
Everything needs to be translated. You know, I everything.
Yeah. Okay.
You guys tell me, you guys probably have some slightly different resources there. You have Science Publishing, and I'm sure not everything they publish gets up here. But, you know, I look at Adventist history and I'm like, man, someone needs to write this for millennials. And I look at, like, Bible study kind of materials and I'm like, somebody needs to write this for millennials. And it's just like, that's the conclusion I have with just about everything, every book, every topic on my shelf.
Okay.
So really, the field is just wide open. Get busy.
Mm. Yeah, cool. And that really, I think that's really central to what Marcus, you remember Marcus Torres from DDC?
Yeah, of course.
I think that's really central to what he's trying to do with his ministry too, which is a really exciting, innovative adventure.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, so just connecting those two things together, we're obviously all about... exactly what you were talking about, I guess, translating, you know, the things that we believe, the things that are relevant to our church, to a millennial generation. And so just regarding the church moving forward, what would you say are some things that we as the church, because, you know, the church is not some ethereal thing over there. It is us.
Yeah.
So what would you say that we as the church need to focus on in order for us to grow into a healthier mission movement? And I'm particularly, you know, wanting to focus that on your knowledge of Adventist history from your study for the podcast.
Well, I have to be careful here because, you know, part of me I'm an idealist and I want to say this is everything we need to fix and get right. But then when I look back at how the early Adventists, you know, did missions, I'm like, man, they weren't perfect. Mm. I would quibble with some of the things that they believed and how they explained them. You know, I mean, yeah, there wasn't always a deep awareness that you can't go from like America to Japan and then just preach how you would preach if you were in Iowa.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't like a huge interest in studying Buddhism or something and understanding your kind of cultural context, at least not at first. Mm-hmm. But what you had was just, they just were willing. You know what I mean? Mm. And so to me, I guess that's like the most fundamental thing. As long as you love God, even if you're not quite perfect on your beliefs, and by perfect, I mean even if you don't quite agree with me. like, as long as you love God and are willing to serve him in whatever way possible. So to me, it just begins with attitude, not with theology. Mm-hmm. What I would like to see, even in my local church, we're kind of going through a process where we're like, what's God's vision for us? I think it kind of begins with a conversation where the church, old, young, like hardcore members, the members on the edge, like we all get together and we're like, what do we want to see this church become? Like, what do we do well? Yes. What don't we do well? And because I think we just kind of go without thinking, without reflection. We just kind of keep doing our thing. And at some point you just got to hit the brakes. And to me, that's the first step for a healthy church is, let's talk about our church.
That's awesome.
Because that could be quite a hard conversation to have. Like, I don't know if you've got it in America. I imagine you do. But there seems to be, between like the new millennial generation and older generations, more of a disconnect between them than I don't know that there's been before. I guess, you know, life seemed to be fairly simple and roll through for some previous generations. And obviously, this is me as a younger person looking back. But, you know, I didn't know that there was much of a cultural shift as this new millennial, you know, coming through. We're always told that we're, you know, over-entitled and we expect the world and everything like that. And as a young person, I feel like sometimes we're just confused by the enormity of the world and no one's really willing to explain that to us. But
do you
find that sometimes, I guess, you know, that can be a real hard thing to go to a church and say, you know, we need to stop and get us all in the room together so we can all have a shared input.
Yeah. Well, it is. It is, because not everybody recognizes that we need the change. So my kind of like theme text for churches, whatever it was, and is it in Second Chronicles or whatever, Second Kings? Well, anyways, where these lepers are outside the city and they're like, why sit here until we die? it's kind of morbid. It's kind of morbid, but it's kind of, you know, hey, let's recognize what's happening to church in the Western world, okay?
Yeah.
Like, let's stop thinking that, you know, we kind of, man, this is such a huge topic, but let me just briefly say, like, we have so many defense mechanisms as church members to prevent us from having an honest, transparent conversation. So we say things like, well, nobody wants to come to our church because people are so worldly and they just hate the truth. And it's like, well, I don't know, maybe your church, maybe the problem is your church meets in a cave and everyone hates each other. You know, like, that's a possibility too. But, you know, but we say things that insulates ourselves.
Yes.
You know, it's always their fault, their problem. It's something they're doing. Oh, they want us to have this music. They want us to have this kind of preaching. They, you know, it's like, well, yeah, but maybe some do. But honestly, I think I'd go to an old church where everyone was like legitimately kind and enjoyed being around each other and had fun together. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'd be okay with that. I don't care what kind of music they play.
Being surrounded by people that love each other, right?
Yeah. I just think we got to get rid of the defense mechanisms. We got to just strip through that. Stop playing games with ourselves. Feel like it is what it is. Church is declining.
Yeah.
We need to have a talk.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love that. So you're saying, you know, honesty about, you know, where we're actually at is key to it, you know. Humility, you know, recognizing that we may not actually have everything right. Moving forward transparently.
That's right.
That's great.
That's where it starts.
And that's so key, because sometimes we're so inclined to blame the organizational structure for our problems at a local church level. When really the conversation you're talking about, yeah, I mean, that can happen at the general conference, but it can also just happen at a local church.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, we got to stop blaming there's never been a general conference president in my lifetime that's ever made a decision that materially affected my life as an Adventist. Mm-hmm. I mean, we got to stop blaming other people.
Yeah. I have a friend who he went and sat in the general conference. No, not the general conference. The conference, local conference, president's office to talk to him at one time. And just while he was in there, he saw the intense amount of stress that that man was under. And he said, I am never going to criticize a conference president again.
Yeah.
Too often we think of them as, you know, that they should be better than this, but we forget that they're human too.
Right.
And their job is intense.
Right. They just need to drop the bureaucracy, man. Just completely scrap it.
Right?
Who involved?
Well, my personal belief is like, you should never criticize somebody you're not praying for.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
That's pretty powerful, man, because it's easy to criticize someone and then you go, oh, I don't really want to include them in my prayer because they annoy me and I don't think they're doing a good job.
Yeah. That's right.
Awesome. I love that. So, you know, just sort of summarizing what you've said is, you know, one of the ways that we should be including entrepreneurship in the way that we do church is by giving people that freedom to express themselves, you know, not taking that away from people. Translating Adventism is really important because the message that we have is great. But sometimes we're communicating that message in a way that's either outdated or just completely irrelevant to the people that need to hear it. And so we're speaking to ourselves.
Right.
Or it sounds confining.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And then moving forward, you know, one of the ways you're saying would be just to have an honest conversation. Well, that's nice and simple. I like that.
Yeah. Well, it'd be nice to be like, you know, here's 15 points we need to work on. But I really think we overthink it. We overstudy it.
Yeah. I love that too because, you know, just to be honest with you, that's exactly what we're doing at our local church at the moment. The leadership team, we've been meeting, we've been discussing, you know, what's actually going on here? What should be going on here? What is our mission, you know? The church has this vision statement that it's had for like 15 years, you know? Is that really the vision that we have anymore, or is that the previous generation's vision?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Or it's the vision we wish we had.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to recognize too that, you know, the vision and the, you know, direction that we're going to look at our local church and going forward is going to, you know, be different to your church, whether it's vastly or only minutely, but each church is individual. So I think it's important not to necessarily as members look at someone else's church and go, oh, they're just doing it so much better than us. You know, we should be exactly like them because we're not all the same. And so we should embrace that too.
Yeah,
exactly.
Every church should have its own fingerprint.
Hmm.
Hey, I like that. That's a good way of putting it. I like that a lot.
Okay, well, we know you have time constraints, so just as we wrap up, there's a couple of quick questions that we wanted to hit you up with.
Yeah, so obviously we know that 2018 is wrapping up, okay? Christmas is only going to soon be upon us, and I know this because I have got mountains of shutdown work coming my way, so that's where all the big industries start closing down for end of year, which means I start getting stupid busy, but... What have you got planned for your 2019?
All right. I want to have another conversation with you guys some other time about you guys and Christmas and bragging about things shutting down. I'll be working Christmas Eve, thank you.
That's rough,
but,
bro.
Okay, so 2019. I'm going to break this news here.
Oh, yes, exclusive.
Exclusive. Exclusive. I'm working on a book related to the Adventist History Podcast.
Wow, that's cool.
So I'm going to do my own bit of translating Adventism in that form. So I'm hoping actually that Science will publish it, that Nathan will do it.
Awesome.
So that's the goal. Put in a good word for me if you see him.
Sure. I don't know how much weight our voice carries. I'm not going to share the title or topic yet.
What's that?
I was going to say, I don't know how much weight our voice carries, but sure, man, you get five voices your way.
A lot of weight. Your voice has a lot of weight. Just increase the bass in post-production to give it more weight. So we're gonna do the book. Been talking about doing another podcast in 2019.
Is this the mass one?
What's that?
Is it the maths podcast?
The mass podcast?
No,
oh.
Mathematics.
Oh, the math. I was like, mass. I'm not going back to the Catholic Church. Trying to trick me. Someone put you up for this. This would be the math one, right?
No, sorry.
No, I don't know. I feel kind of like jealous of your guys' interview format. It's kind of lonely just doing the podcast the way I do my podcast. So okay. I I wish I could like always return the favor and talk with you guys and talk with other people. It seems like such a fun format. So I don't know. Maybe it'll be something like that.
Bring your family over to Australia, and we'll get you around the real table, man, and show you a bit of good Aussie culture.
I would so love that. Every time I hear you guys' voices, it just makes me happy inside.
Thanks, man. Thanks.
You guys, I seriously, like of the English-speaking world, we really drew the short end of the straw here as far as accents are concerned. It's just boring.
You just got to have some criminal in you.
What's that?
You just got to have some criminal in you.
Is that what it is? Is that what it is? I thought you had to have chimney sweep in your ancestry somewhere.
Now. Cool. So you've got the book, and you're going to work on a new podcast.
Yeah, those are my two big things, my two big personal projects.
That's awesome. That's really exciting. Congrats, man.
Yeah.
So it's probably going to make this next wrap up question go. But if you were given $1 million to invest, you know, say Oprah knocked on your front door and said, "You get $1 million," what would you do with it?
There's a lot. Okay, so let's just put it this way. How about this? If I didn't have to worry about money for myself and my family, and I could just spend $1 million. So, you know, otherwise I might put it in my retirement account because.
Yep.
But okay, but if I had to give it away, if I had to use it for other people like that, what my dream is, I want to start. You know how they have like these incubators? I don't know if they call them the same thing over there, but here they have these incubators where it's like a kind of office space for tech startups.
Yep.
To begin it.
Yep.
Okay. So I would want to start one of those for Adventists with entrepreneurial ideas. I mean, I don't mean just they want to start their own carpeting business. I mean, you know, a ministry.
Yep.
So, and it'd be like free, like two bedrooms, you know, bathroom, kitchen, like communal kitchen, and then like workspace, you know, free internet, whatever. I'd provide all of that. Just come up with ideas, man. Do cool things.
Awesome. That's great.
Yeah, that sounds like something I've never heard of before, but that sounds cool.
Yeah, I just feel like we need some R&D, but the problem is it doesn't pay, right? So if you're like an Adventist illustrator, it doesn't pay very well. If you're an Adventist whatever, it doesn't pay very well. It's like I want to be able to take care of people so they're free to kind of fully explore what they think God is calling them to do. And that would be my dream.
Yeah. I would love to see somebody do something like what the Bible Project do for Adventism.
Right, exactly. That would something be so like cool. That.
Yeah.
Because most of our illustrators and creative people are often doing their own work, and they can kind of only dedicate part of their time and resources and talent towards ministry. Right. So yeah, it'd be great if you could, you know, I guess get a full percentage of their time, even if it was for 6 months or something.
Well, we'll have to work on getting him $1 million, eh?
Yeah, mate.
Okay.
I'll just call Oprah.
Yeah.
You'll call Oprah. Yeah.
Perfect.
That'll go real well.
Yeah, just give her a call and just, you know, put in a good word for me. So first call Nathan Brown at Science, and then call Oprah if you don't mind. Actually, I don't even care what order you do that in. That's all right.
And he'll put on his nice deep voice for that conversation.
That's right. That's right.
All right. Last question. If you could give one piece of advice to a young Adventist person listening to this, what would it be?
Take ownership.
Wow. Yeah.
Just step up. Okay. Step up.
So you know, stop expecting the older people to do all the work, eh?
That's right. Yeah, and I know it hurts sometimes. I know you're probably in a church situation where you can't quite do all the things you want to do. Then if you can't become an influential member of your local Adventist church, then become an influential member of the digital Adventist church.
Oh man, that's
deep.
That's profound. Yeah, but it's so simple too. Like you know, it's just a straightforward. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Man.
That's great.
Yeah. So, you know, there's some people out there who, like, some Adventists who are, like, I would say, like, are elders of the digital church, but their local church won't ask them to do anything.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, just be humble about it. You know, it's not about us. It's not about recognition. It's just, but man, do that thing that God is calling you to do. Just don't, you know, you got to have that entrepreneurial spirit. Just go do it.
Mm. Yeah. That's cool. Awesome. Well, look, we should let you go. You have a doctor's appointment to attend to. So,
yes.
Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast, though, mate. It's been great. Tell your family thanks from us. for giving you that permission
to come to the virtual blue gum table.
That's right. Next door to that attractive couch in your office.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, let's hope we can add some more furniture the next time we do this.
Yeah, and next time we should do it in a non-virtual way.
Yes, yes, let's do it. Yes. So I asked the Burn a Haystack people to come to General Conference. Are you guys coming too? let's get everyone.
To bring the table, like,
rent a boat or something, and just sail over here.
Hey, man, I'm just saying, if that haystack needed a bit more kindling, we could smash a table too. Just make a bonfire, mate.
You guys provide the table, they'll provide the haystack and the fire.
That's right, because if we...
I'll document it for history.
If we build a big enough fire, man, they're just going to have to take notice of this young generation coming forward, eh?
Just saying, this is sounding very much like Captain Bates.
This is a serious metaphor we're building, huh? Right? Guys, thank you so much for inviting me to be on your podcast.
No worries.
Thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you.
And really want to wish you the best for 2019 with the book and the new podcast.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for all the work that you already do.
Thank you very much, guys.
All right. God bless. Have a great day.
All right, mate. See ya.
All right. You too.
Firstly, if you enjoyed the episode, please tell us about it. Jump onto social media, wherever you happen to find us, and tell us what you thought of the episode. Give us any suggestions, or topics you may like to see in the future. We read everything and respond to just about everything that we can. Secondly, if you enjoyed the episode, share it with someone else who you know would love it too, because that's ultimately how we grow. If you share it with your friends, and then they share it with their friends, and so it goes on. Thirdly, if you want to be one of our favorite listeners in the world, just jump on and give us a review, particularly if you can jump into iTunes, give us a review there or whatever podcast aggregator that you happen to use. And also, if you want to give us a review on our Facebook page, that would also make a big difference to when people discover us and decide whether we're worth listening to. That would be a real blessing. But until then, we look forward to seeing you next time and have a great week. Bye.